Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, fellas? Welcome back to Convos Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. Today we are talking to fellow YouTuber and professional triathlete Ari Clow. You may know him. He's been in a lot of Spencer Brown, aka the Athlete Specials videos. He created his own YouTube channel back in 2020. He ran for University of Virginia before becoming a professional triathlete. In this episode, we talk about YouTube, his path to professional triathlon after being a competitive runner for so long, struggles of triathlon and pursuing your dreams, the highs and lows of the sport, and much more. So stay tuned. Today's episode is brought to you by Green Chef. Green Chef is a CCOF certified meal kit company that makes eating well easy with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle. So whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, or you're just looking to eat more balanced meals like me, Green Chef offers a range of recipes to suit your preferences. You guys know I've been working with Green Chef for over a year now, and I am literally obsessed. When their box comes to my door, I get so excited. Right now, you guys can go to greenchef.com/coldbrew130 and use code coldbrew130 to get $130 off plus free shipping. That is greenchef.com/coldbrew130 and use code coldbrew130 to get $130 off plus free shipping. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well. Highly recommend you go check it out. Now let's go get into today's episode. Okay, Ari, I'm excited to have you on the podcast. Welcome to Convos Over Cold Brew. To start off, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself, like who you are, what you're about?
Yeah, I'm Ari. I'm a professional triathlete. That's like the only thing I do these days. I also like making music, and those two come together. Sometimes on YouTube videos where I exercise to my own music. To be perfectly honest, it's like a bit of not an identity struggle right now, but like definitely in a an ebb of like sport and life. Yeah. Sure, everyone kind of has been through that before, but truthfully, that's where I'm at. So in a couple months from now, the answer of who am I might be different, but
yeah
right now it's a bit of
Why do you think you're in an ebb?
Oh, every time I exercise, it's a bit slower than it used to be. And that's kind of like, that's where it starts. A lot of it starts with I'm like living alone. I on paper, it's this fantastic opportunity. And I guess, my job right now, like I don't have a sort of wealth of sponsors paying me to just do triathlon. The way this is, sustainable right now is I'm out here training with Lionel Sanders, who's, he finished last year ranked third in the world for long course triathlon. He was training alone for basically a decade and asked if I would come train with him. And it seemed like an absolutely perfect opportunity. And it is a great opportunity, but I'm very much on my own. I've always had a very robust support system around me, a lot of friends are keeping me grounded, and I don't have that anymore. So it's like a huge learning experience of holding myself accountable, which I have done a horrible job at the past 3 or 4 months. So it's really just figuring that out, like how do I do this on my own, or how do I find and build the support system that I need to hold me accountable if I'm not able to do it myself.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that probably also comes from collegiate athletics. Like obviously having a team around you, it's very structured and you know exactly what you're doing and you have teammates that are there with you every day. So, I mean, I feel like a lot of people relate to that if they're trying to do any sort of like endurance sport after college. It's like it just becomes way more individual, and like you have to be very intrinsically motivated to get out the door every day, rather than having someone tell you like when to get out the door and when to go to practice and stuff. So, I mean, I get it. I think a lot of people do. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, with college sports was when that ended, which for me was pandemic, like March 2020 was the last time I went to practice. It was kind of great because I was like ready to be done with it. I had done 4.5 years of listening to coaches and doing everything my teammates did. And there was kind of this sense of like, I think I might need something different. And so I had a perfect opportunity to try that. But also in college, I had messed myself up so many times before by not listening to my coaches that I had a really good sense of what can I handle and how hard should I be pushing? Cause I am very, very intrinsically motivated. Like I don't need someone to tell me to get out the door. Actually, more often than not, I need someone to tell me not to get out the door.
So is that what you would do in college? Like you would just go against your coach's wishes and go do like a double or something?
I got to college freshman year, literally within a couple of weeks, I was like, what am I doing? I'm in college. Like this is Division I. I need to be running 100 miles a week. My coach was like, dude, like, just what are you doing? Just like do the workouts. Like you just got
18 years old. Let's like, bump it up.
You don't know what you're talking about. Like I need to do, in addition to the 3 crazy workouts a week you're giving me, plus the, you know, 18-mile long run, I need to be hitting triple digits. And then, and that was, I think I did it for like 2 weeks and then I broke down pretty quick, but that was, it was basically 2 years of that, of me being like, my coaches don't know what I can handle. I need to do more, and just injury after injury after injury. So, and then finally there were 3 years of like, all right, I'm going to listen to my coach this time and I'm going to do a little bit less. So the pandemic hit and I was on my own. Like I actually got in the best shape of my life because I had learned how to enjoy myself and not feel like I had to push it to the limit every day or every week.
Yeah.
But I don't have that in triathlon yet. I'm still figuring out where my limits are. And so I got here, I'm training with, you know, this guy's been doing it for like 12 or 13 years. He's literally among the best in the world at ultra endurance sports. And I tried for a couple of weeks to do everything that he did. And
okay, but and he's also like the most insane one, I feel like. Oh, like yeah, he's always doing the most. He does the most out of any other person. I mean, it's not like I study triathlon, but like the people I do watch and follow, I feel like Lionel is the craziest one. No offense to him, like obviously it works, but I'm like, I just don't understand how you can do that much stuff.
But then I want that reputation, right? So yeah. I was like, I'm gonna do everything that the most insane guy does, because I want to be the most insane guy. Like I want to be more insane than this guy. It seems like a perfect opportunity.
Endurance sport behavior right there. I want to be the most insane one.
I really messed my body, like hormonally, like everything was just suppressed, and it got to the point where I just really couldn't train. Like I had to just completely rest. So I'm trying to build it back up now and learn from previous mistakes. But
yeah. So you ran at UVA, right? All 4 years or 4.5 or whatever?
Yeah, 4.5. Yeah.
So you were pretty good. I mean, I was looking up your T-first, as I do all the time. I'm a big fan of T-first. No, just kidding. I don't really look up stats, but you ran 7:51 and 3K. That's pretty good.
That's solid. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you like, I don't know, you graduated, were you looking to run professionally or did you know that you wanted to do something else?
No, I was definitely looking to run pro. So that the 7:51, I would call myself a chronic underperformer in college. Just the pressure always got to me. And then in addition, the like constantly being overtrained and not always listening to what the coaches had in mind. I didn't know how to race. I was really good at training and I just didn't know how to race. And so I got to the point where my fifth year of cross, like it was just another, like I poured my heart and soul into it, and then came, you know, 200th at NCAAs when I wanted to try to be All-American. This classic, there's a lot of people who can relate to that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't know how long I can do this to myself. Like, it's constant disappointment. I was doing computer science. That fifth year, I was doing a master's. Like, I already had a job lined up for that summer. So I knew I could just go get a job and live a normal life. And I was in this long distance relationship, it was long distance at that point because she had graduated, moved to Seattle. So I was like, oh, I'm going to just go get a job. I'm going to be a software engineer, live in Seattle. I'm going to quit running. I'm going to join a weekend, like, adult rec soccer league. Like, that's, that's the dream. And then actually 2 weeks before that 751, she dumped me, and I had to really take a hard look at what I wanted to do. And I don't know, that race, I just finally was like, okay, I'm here to race. It doesn't matter how fit I am. Like, I'm just going to try to win the race. And I won the race. Like, it was like, for the first time, I didn't care about time. And so after that, I was like, whoa, like, I could maybe actually run pro. Like, I could finally have this dream really come true. So I was in really good shape. I was the first one out of NCAAs. So, like, I was 17th on the list. I was like, somebody's definitely going to scratch.
It's
like,
that's the worst.
I'm going to get on a plane, like, you know, the Thursday or Friday before and race on Saturday or Sunday, whatever it is. Like, it always happens. Like, the 17th guy always gets in. And then they canceled it. And then they canceled everything. So I withdrew from my master's program and took that job. And so I was just working in Charlottesville, like, fully remote. And just having a good time running, like, really, that's probably the most I've ever enjoyed it. Like, I truly did whatever I wanted, which was like one crazy hard workout once a week, and then I would just run with my friends the other 6 days.
Yeah.
And that was somehow a recipe for getting in really, really good shape. No contracts were really given out except pretty much to, like, Spencer.
Yeah, I mean, so it was extremely, luckily, the budget for 2020 for professional runners was extremely slim.
Yeah. But luckily for me, Spencer, who, like, we, you know, we ran against each other in high school. We were really good friends. We decided to go out to Boulder together. And then in Boulder, he got that contract. And then we all moved to Seattle, and the Beast said I'd be able to train with them. They'd give me shoes, whatever. And I was like, okay, so maybe I can run myself into a contract this indoor or outdoor season. Like, I've got a job. I don't really need to worry about money. I can just keep chasing it. It seemed like a perfect situation. And then I got injured, which I don't blame Brooks' shoes for this. I blame myself for just wearing the wrong shoe, switching into like hard switch. There was no transition whatsoever. Like, I'd been running in the same shoe for like 4 or 5 years, and then just started wearing the Brooks because they gave them to me for free. Got injured. And by this point, it was raining in Seattle like every day. So I bought a bike trainer, had a power meter on it, it's not the most accurate thing, but it was good enough.
Geez, wow, that's like a big purchase, though, to just get a bike trainer with a power meter.
I was making good money. I was a software engineer. It was probably the best.
Oh, that is true. Yeah, you had the software engineer budget.
Oh, so, yeah, I was just like, whatever. Yeah, just throw it on the credit card. And I completely got hooked on biking. And I was doing pretty good power. Like, I was looking at, like, I didn't know anything, but once I, you know, I did a 20-minute test, it's like 350 watts. So I look it up. I'm like, oh, jeez, like, that's pretty good. That's pretty good for my weight. Like, I like this. I'm good at it. Like, I'm going to keep doing this, and it'll probably help for running. So the injury kind of took a while to subside. I built up for this 5K doing mostly biking and like a little bit of running, just trying to get in one workout a week. And then at some point in this training block, Lionel found my YouTube channel and invited me to train here in Tucson. So that was that was about a year ago, March, 2021.
So were you filming, like, YouTube videos of you, like, biking on Zwift, but then also like running on the side, but you hadn't transitioned to triathlon yet?
Yeah, no. So that was it. It was like,
okay.
Former collegiate runner gets on a trainer, like, you know, just doing, I mean, it started with, I would do like a track workout in the morning and then go and do a workout on the trainer in the evening. That was kind of like the initial structure of the videos for the first couple.
Okay.
And then it was like, okay, I'm actually training now. I'm actually like, doing bike workouts, like, you know, not the same day as the running workout, and trying to actually use it to build up for this 5K. But it was not triathlon. I had no plans to do triathlon. USAT, the CRP, had reached out and offered to start like paying for swim coaching, but
it because was really of your hard. YouTube channel, or
yes,
that's so crazy. That's so crazy to think about.
Yeah, and I probably would have done it earlier, but it was just hard to get pool access during COVID.
Yeah. Oh my God, it was so awful.
Yeah. So I was basically just biking and running. But then when I came here to train with Lionel, I was like, you know, the pool's open every day, swimming every day.
Yeah.
So I decided I was gonna give triathlon a shot.
What was that decision like? So Lionel was like, come train with me, and you're like, I mean, I guess I'll like give up running and just go to triathlon.
I was starting to doubt whether just because of the biking. Well, I knew I was going to keep biking anyway. Like I loved it. It wasn't about competition anyway, but also I knew I was good at it. And so I had two of the three right there. And I started to think that I probably had a better future in triathlon than I would in running, you know, and it's like, I would look at like who are the best runners in the country, who are the best runners in the world, and it's like I'm just never gonna get there. Like,
yeah,
I could grind at this for 10 years and like maybe I'll be like dark horse at like a US final. Like
yeah,
that's what I believed my peak was, right? And like as soon as you believe that that's kind of where your peak is,
it's hard to get past that and be like I'm gonna be an Olympic champion.
Yeah, like I was like, that's just not going to happen. That's fine. It's as long as I enjoy it. That's the most important thing. But I was like, well, triathlon, it's this completely new thing. I don't know anything about it. Like I have two of these three disciplines. If I'm a half decent swimmer, then like maybe instead of being one of the best in the country, I can be one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
So maybe my potential there is greater. And then the probably the biggest thing, which is a blessing and a curse, is I looked at the amount of training that these guys were doing. And I was like, that's awesome. I want to do that 30 hours a week. Like train literally all day.
Oh my gosh. That's the recipe. Sport. Yeah. That's how, you know, I feel like if you want to be a good triathlete, if you love to train. Morgan Pearson came on my podcast back in, I think it was 2020. And he said the same thing. I mean, he just loves to train like hours and hours, and he would be doing 100+ miles a week in college. Like if you love exercising, you just love pushing yourself and you just love spending hours training, then you'll love triathlon. So that makes sense. Cool.
100%. And I think even if I were to go back and compete as a distance runner, I would find a way to do like 25 hours of triathlon training.
Just supplement it.
Focused track workouts or whatever. But I just love the amount of training. Like I don't really want to do anything else with my day. So that was one of the biggest reasons I wanted to give it a go. And I just had such a good time training with Lionel and learning how to swim. And then I went and joined a legitimate like triathlon group in New Hampshire. It was, it's almost like a college team. Like we had practice every day. And there's, you know, coach on deck, which the biggest reason there was, he would be able to help me fix my swim stroke.
How was your swim right away?
What, like times? What do you?
Well, yeah. Like, were you good? I mean, I feel like a lot of runners struggle with swimming, getting into it right away.
I think I was for someone who, all right, I'm a shit swimmer. Like in terms of pro triathlon, I'm not a good swimmer.
Okay.
Like I'm going to be back of the pack, of a pro field for swimming, really, really bad. but for someone who hops in the pool at age 24 with no prior experience, like didn't grow up swimming, I think I was like pretty good. Like, I don't think you hop in the pool and are much better than that. But again, there's all those qualifiers of 24, no experience. So I was able to just like swim, 120 for 100 yards. That's short course yards for people listening.
Yeah.
Not meters. So like, continuously, not like all out 120, but, that's sort of like what I was able to hold for an entire session.
That's not bad. That's actually pretty good for runners. I mean, I see a lot of runners who are just horrendous at swimming, so
yeah,
that's pretty good, to be honest.
I was discouraged because I was like getting lapped like constantly. But I wasn't discouraged enough to say like, oh, I should stick to running.
Yeah. So you moved to New Hampshire. What team was it?
It's called JP Elite.
I know
my coach.
I think I know Allie. Is she on
Allie Brower?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that I know of that team. That's like a pretty like solid group of people, isn't it? Are they all in the CRP or are they not in the CRP? I don't understand how
like
triathlon
half
works.
CRP. It's like half CRP, half not CRP. But it's a good group. Like Ali had 2 70.3 podiums this year.
Yeah.
My buddy Mark had 2 podiums also, long course. So it's a good group of athletes. They can all swim. Like I was by far the worst swimmer there. So that was kind of one of the reasons. It's like, it's a very, I would say balanced, but all of them could swim. James knew how to coach the swim. So that was kind of the impetus for going there is like, I need to like, that's going to be the difference maker for me is can I really learn how to swim?
Yeah. Over the next how was that experience years. Then?
I got a lot better at swimming. And I met some of my best friends there. It was tough. There were 4 of us, 4 guys, like we're all the same age. It was like, you know, college part 2 in a way. But there were 4 of us in a 2-bedroom apartment. I was literally sleeping in a bunk bed for 6 months. It was crazy, but you know, you do crazy things if you're chasing a dream, I guess. But it was great. I was just, we were all just living, breathing triathlon. Like, you know, we wake up, we go swim, we eat, go bike, you know, we have run workout later that day, whatever it was great. It was awesome. I think a little bit, I kind of struggled with how structured it was. I think after the whole post, NCAA COVID experience with it being so unstructured and having such a good time and kind of being able to do whatever I want, going back into a very structured, almost collegiate environment of like, here's what we're doing every day. I struggled with that a little bit. But otherwise it was great. And I got a lot better. And in many ways it's, you know, I'm thinking back now of like, I know this is a really good situation here with Lionel, but like, would I have been better if I stayed there?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, kind of, I believe that I can make decisions wherever I go, but
it's hard to think about that when you're not feeling very good or like, you're just not in the time where you're like doing very well. Or like you said, you're in your ebb phase. So of course you're going to be thinking like, oh, if I stayed there, like would I have done better? But I feel like a lot of the time it's like, you're thinking about all the positives. Maybe you're not thinking about the negative side of the situation and like why you decided to leave in the first place and everything. So I'm sure it just has to do with timing as well, why you're feeling like that sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and initially here, it's like the first 6 weeks here, I was like firing on all cylinders. Like I was doing some of the best biking and best swimming that I had done. And the running's interesting because I've more or less accepted that I will never be running as fast as I did in college. It's like, essentially the goal now is to be able to just run 6-minute pace for a marathon, like, pretty not easily, but like be able to run 6-minute pace for a marathon off the bike in an Ironman. Like that's what the training is geared towards. So like, I don't know if I'll ever break 60 in a 400 again, you know, like that.
Yeah.
That's just, so the running is different and it's hard to compare. But I was doing some really good swimming and some really good biking and then it was just too much. So I know if I can just get some momentum behind me that this can be a good situation. But yeah, you're right. It's hard to think about things clearly in the ebb phase.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So when did you quit your job, right? At some point?
Yeah. So that was January 2021.
Okay. That, like, I just can't imagine training like 30 hours a week and then having a job on top of it.
Well, I wasn't able. That's part of one of the reasons I knew I wanted to quit for a while is because I wasn't able to train.
Yeah. So then how are you financially supporting yourself during that time? How did you make the decision? You're like, okay, I'm going to quit my job and do this.
So and I'll be I didn't know if I would be okay. That's the truth. I had 12,000 like savings in the bank that I was like, this is what I will try to survive on for the next however many months. And then I had the YouTube channel. So the, you know, ad revenue was just dependent on how much I was able to post. And yeah, that was it. And then I started a Patreon not long after that. So I was just like kind of supplementing different revenue sources.
Yeah.
But I just did my taxes. Well, actually, I'm not done. I have 3 days or 2 days to finish my taxes. But I made $13,000 in 2021. So, and I probably spent way more than that. Like, just so.
Yeah.
It was not sustainable. Like, I was not going to be able to do that for a really long time, which is kind of why this situation out here with Lionel is, it was almost a no brainer. It's like, I still wasn't making enough money to just do this full time. I was still kind of living on the savings I had from the job. But I knew that I wanted to do this, and it was only a matter of time until I tried it. So I decided to just take the leap and say, all right, if this lasts 6 months and then I have to go get the job again, that's fine. At least I tried.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've read, have you read The Alchemist?
No.
Oh, well, you should read it. It's a phenomenal book. It's such a good book. And I always come back to that book. Like, but it's about this kid following his personal legend is the way the author words it. And there's this line in the book, that goes something along the lines of, if you follow your dream, the universe will conspire to help you along the way. And it just, I don't know how it's true, but like, it's true. It happened. Like, it's like the YouTube community, you know, my coach, James Peterson, Lionel, like, all these people along the way, have made this possible. So I forget where I was, but
yeah, obviously, yeah. Things are, yeah, you're able to do what you love right now, I guess. I mean, so now are you back? You're in Arizona now.
Yeah.
So what's the plan now? Because you say that you've had some hormonal issues just from, you think, volume of training and everything. Like, what's the next move for you?
A couple weeks ago was like, I would say rock bottom of the physical sensations. Like, I wasn't really able to finish sessions. I felt horrible. If I would do a hard session, not only would that session be really hard, but it would take me like days, like several days to recover, just to feel like half decent again.
Yeah.
So I kind of realized I needed to rest. So I took a week and a half to 2 weeks, like off/crazy. I wouldn't even call them sessions. It was just like, I was trying not to go crazy. Just sitting inside, like, yeah, literally where I'm sitting right now, I would switch spots of where I'm sitting. Yeah. And like,
chairs.
Like, I was just like, just don't scroll Instagram. Like, that's not you. Like, at least just like sit there and think, or like meditate or something. Whatever, read a book. But really, I really need to exercise. So I would do really, really easy sessions, like the equivalent of shakeouts, just to like do something that day. But I did that until I started really feeling energetic again. And was like, oh, I really want to do like a proper session. And last week was my first real week back. Like, I'm actually coaching myself now, instead of what I was doing for the first 4 months. Was I say, oh, Lionel, what do you got this week? And he's like, oh, I got this, this, and this. And in my head, I would be like, all right, I'll do that. Well, for the most part, I was actually like, okay, I'll just do that. Like, yeah. I wasn't taking away sessions, but now I'm actually looking at the training peaks and like planning out my week. And it makes it a lot easier to see like, oh, am I building up too quickly? Is this reasonable? Is this too much, too little? So I'm trying to take a smarter approach to it this time. But for the most part, I need to find some consistency again. That's the number one thing. I felt like I had a lot of momentum behind me before, and now I feel like I have none. So I just need to get the ball rolling again. I'm not thinking about racing. I'm just trying to enjoy the process of training. So it's week two. There's not much fitness to be gained. You know, it'll probably take, you know, 3, 4, or 5 weeks to feel like I'm getting somewhere. But I don't feel like absolute crap every single day. I'm able to train. So I'm just going to try to sustain that and stack the weeks on top of each other.
Yeah. Do you think it was just overtraining? Like, do you think you were just doing too much volume?
You don't know. So I was doing plant-based diet for a bit over a year. And I really thought it was giving me an edge for at least the beginning. I started it like last February, I think, you know, right around the time, right before I started triathlon. So it was hard to compare sort of before and after. But I got a blood test and my ferritin was low. So it's hard to say. Like, I was reading studies and like sometimes ferritin will drop when you taper. There's sort of a natural like cycle based on what your workout schedule is where your ferritin will be. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty low. Like, it was way lower than any number I'd ever seen in college and like a previous blood test. But, you know, my hemoglobin was good. My hematocrit was good. So it's hard to say if that was an effect, like if that was actually causing something. So I think it was just overtraining, but it's hard to say for sure. Yeah. You know, I don't know if there were some nutritional deficits there.
Why did you decide to go plant-based? I've seen like so many people, not so many people, but there's been like
that Game Changers documentary.
What? Okay. Well, I mean that, but then just like, even in like the pro running community or just, yeah, I guess triathlon going plant-based, but then not being plant-based anymore after a while. So it's been interesting to see that too. I mean, I don't have any dietary restrictions, but I'm always just curious as like, what made your decision to go plant-based in the first place?
I was just looking to get an edge. Like, yeah. And you know, I had read some stuff that like suggested that it can give you an edge. And there's always been people trying to say that it's better than a carnivore or an omnivorous diet. And then there was that, this wasn't what pushed me over the edge, but there was this documentary that came out about this guy who was like a UFC fighter, tore his ACL, and then found like all this research about plant-based diets and sort of uncovered, like, you know, all these conspiracies of the meat industry and this and that. And that documentary also suggested that if you are an athlete, this might give you an edge. And I was like, okay, I'm seeing all this stuff. I'll try it and see if it works for me. And initially I felt really good. I would say the biggest thing, and this is something I'm keeping in my diet, is that when you don't eat animal products, you just digest everything so much easier. So if I'm doing three sessions in a day and I don't eat animal products in the two, like, you know, whatever meals I'm eating between sessions, I never have any stomach issues.
Yeah.
Which was never the case before. If I'm like going out for a double and I had sort of a heavy lunch, like even 4 or 5 hours later, it's still just sitting there. I'm like, oh, like why? You know, I wish I had eaten less or eaten something different. So I'm still trying not to eat like too many animal products until I'm basically done for the day. But I think everybody, especially competitive athletes, are always looking to be healthier and to find some sort of competitive edge. And there are very few things that I will not try to see if it helps. You know, if someone was like, oh, caffeine's actually horrible for you. I love coffee. I have like five espressos a day, probably. I just, you know, I'm like cripplingly addicted. But I would yank that off if someone,
oh my gosh, really?
Like, there's, yeah, or if someone was like, oh, you have to go keto. It's like, you know, and what I also believe is there's no silver bullet. None of those things are probably necessary. But yeah, I was just looking for something. And for a while, I felt like it did give me an edge, but I wasn't able to eat enough to sustain. That's what I was like,
if you're doing insane amounts of training, I can't even imagine how much you would have to eat to, especially like on a vegan diet, to like sustain yourself.
It was borderline like uncomfortable how much I would force myself to eat.
Yeah.
And if I didn't do that, I would sometimes feel like, you know, hungry going to bed or whatever. Like, it's just because animal products are so much more nutrient dense than plants, you know, with the exception of like nut butters or something, or oils.
Yeah.
It's just harder to pack all those nutrients into your stomach. Like, you have limited space there.
Yeah.
So I've always like eaten a lot, but it was hard for me to eat enough. So that, yeah, total confluence of factors of maybe not getting enough iron, maybe not getting enough calories total, maybe not getting enough protein total, training too much, like too much volume, too much intensity.
Yeah.
It's hard to say what it was.
Yeah. You definitely gave it a good shot. Like, I think that's cool that you, I mean, tried it out and you felt good and now you're like adjusting and everything. I feel like people have just such rigid views on like diet, especially, but I feel like every single person is different. And I mean, you gave it a shot. A year's a long time to like go fully plant-based. So,
yeah.
I mean, you're learning, I guess. Learning more about your body. So,
yeah. I mean, you got to find what works for you. I mean, so I did, I wouldn't say I looked into this heavily, but there was this guy I met who like asked me if I had read this book. I forget what it was called, but it was about like Ayurvedic medicine and like Ayurvedic sports medicine in India. And so I was like, I wonder if there's something here that I can take. And one of the tenets of like Ayurvedic medicine is what they called a personalized diet. So each person probably has something that works best for them, and it's not going to be, it's not plant-based works best for everyone. A carnivore diet doesn't work best for everyone. So you need to find what makes you tick.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's so smart. Like, how can you say that there's one catch-all that works for everybody? So I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to find now, is I felt there were tremendous benefits to a plant-based diet. At the very least digestively, and how it forced me to expand what I was eating on a day-to-day basis. Like, I just felt like I had a larger variety of things in the pantry.
Yeah.
So that was good. And I don't want to just throw all that away.
Yeah. You're not going to completely switch over to carnivore diet, so.
No, but God, meat is so tasty. Like, I was totally raised on it. Like, there was always meat.
Yeah.
And in the house growing up, and my dad taught me how to grill when I was, from a young age. So, I definitely, and Instagram, like, I don't know how they know subconsciously what you want, but
you for months I've ads. Been
getting, I was getting like steak, not like, like real, like steak cooking reels, like, just for a while. And
it was a
like,
sign.
They're teasing me with this. Like, but I would watch them anyway. I was like, I don't need to eat this. I'm just watching it.
Cause yeah.
It's beautiful to watch, but somehow they knew, and I almost feel bad because like there's such the plant-based community is a very passionate one.
Mm-hmm.
And at least in the form of YouTube comments, I felt like I had been accepted as one of their own, and now I'm cast out.
You know, cast away. shame.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's your favorite food? A food that you like eat all the time?
I eat a protein, whole wheat protein pancake every morning. That's probably the only thing that I make every day. I eat a ton of rice. I don't know. It's hard. Like, if you ask me my favorite song or my favorite color, my favorite anything, I that's never something that I have just like sitting in my head.
Yeah. There's too many options. Too broad of a question.
Yeah. I will say I probably missed chicken the most, like, for whatever reason, like McNuggets.
not even real chicken, just chicken McNuggets that are like,
yeah, like 25% real chicken. Yeah, that's,
yeah, maybe.
Maybe, but, or just, yeah, I don't know. The way my parents used to just cook chicken, there's probably some childhood subconscious memory just lodged deep in there.
Yeah. Well, you're also a big Chipotle fan. I watched your last video. You're trying to go after the Chipotle sponsor. You said a bold statement. You're like, you don't even have to pay me. You could be my title sponsor. I was like, that's a bold thing to say as
someone,
because you're putting yourself.
Video. Yeah. What? You probably, in the next video, I said, okay, so there's two, I suppose updates since then. In the next video, I was like, I found out there's a VIP card. So if you get the VIP card, you get one free Chipotle every day for a year. If it's the gold VIP card, and then there's the platinum, which is like a lifetime thing.
Oh my gosh. So, I want that.
Yeah. I'm gunning for it. I don't know who to talk to.
Just like, how do you
shouting it out into the void? Like, but I posted on Instagram, just, tagging Chipotle, just trying to let them know. And one of my friends said, oh, if this comment gets 100 likes, I'll buy Ari Chipotle once a week for next 2 months. So it gets like 800 likes. And so he's buying me Chipotle once a week for the next couple months. And then in my latest video, I just revealed this morning, there is a dating website.
Okay, I saw that. I literally watched that video and I was like, how did you get sponsored by a dating website?
Good question. I don't know, but it's actually genius because like they saw an opportunity to get in on a gag instead of just like, here's money and wear our t-shirt, and it's like obviously this fake super commercial sponsorship. Like, no, we'll pay, let us pay for your Chipotle, and that's a way for us to get in your fans' good graces. So I don't have a Chipotle sponsorship from Chipotle, but I have a sponsorship for Chipotle.
So what are they, so how much are they paying for?
They're paying $400 a month, so that's a
good Chipotle segment.
Oh my god, yeah. The problem is like delivery adds up, is like two Chipotle bowls. So if I go and get it, or if I get it on the way home, It's less if I'm like lazy enough that I just order it from home. But I could probably basically eat Chipotle every night.
Yeah.
If I went and picked it up.
What's your Chipotle order?
Actually, yeah, I could. Well, before, up until a couple of weeks ago, it's double brown rice, double black beans, fajitas, sofritas, pico, medium, lettuce, sometimes guac. Probably now guac, now that I'm getting enough money to afford guac.
but now
it's, yeah, now it's, well, initially I kind of went crazy because I was like, oh, I need iron. So I would get double steak and barbacoa. Because I was like, I just need to absolutely.
Is that bowl literally like 40 pounds?
Yeah, just about. It's pretty heavy.
I'm just imagining double rice and beans. Like, that makes it so heavy.
Well, that's the point. I mean, that's like all probably a lot more than half of the protein content. And like, yeah. I said, like I eat a lot. I try to eat a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. It makes sense.
Yeah, so that's a free way to get. I mean, nearly double the food. Like most of the bowl is rice and beans. So if you double the rice and beans, I mean, you're almost doubling your bowl. So yeah, I'm definitely, steak is like I would get chicken. I'll probably switch to chicken eventually once I'm confident my iron has peaked again.
Yeah.
But I just, I like the red meat for whatever, peace of mind.
Yeah. For iron. I feel
like I'm getting in enough. Yeah. Even though it's probably not true. Probably not how it works.
Yeah, how much iron are you really getting?
I'm supplementing with iron twice a day. Like, I probably definitely don't need it, but
yeah.
Again, peace of mind. I just want it like all day, every day. I just feel like I'm getting some iron in.
Yeah. You cook all your meals in cast iron skillets too.
Oh, I should be doing that.
There you go. A little investment you can make now. You can actually take some of my iron. I have high iron, so you can take some of mine. I don't need it.
Oh, you have to be like careful with that. What happens?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I just got my blood work done and my ferritin is actually pretty like normal, but my iron levels are really high. So I'm like, I don't know what that means. I should probably go see a doctor because why is my iron so high? And I don't supplement. So I'm a little confused. I don't know. So I'll figure that out, but you can take some if you want.
Of mine. All right. Yeah. Send it over.
Yeah. So that sounds good. Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit about YouTube because your YouTube channel is kind of popping off. So you started, would you say, because of Spencer? Was he like, you should start a channel?
No, this is a hilarious thing. So, I don't know, years ago, I had this college teammate, good friend, Sam Teller. He was he's a big like video guy, like making YouTube videos. And he asked if I would do a takeover, like a vlog one day at practice. It's like, oh yeah, for sure. So I did a vlog. I didn't really think anything of it. You know, he gave me his camera. I filmed myself going through my day. And he put it together. And then it got back to me several months later that Will and Spencer had watched it. And Will was like, yeah, Spencer, this is pretty good. Like maybe Ari should start a channel. And Spencer was like, no, he can't start a channel because he'll realize he's better than me and he'll take all the fans. Like, you know, he was joking. Like I was no threat at the point. At that point. But then I guess the fans took a liking to me. When I started appearing in the vlogs when we were in Boulder. And I guess I saw the value of like sharing your experience. Like people love consuming content. It seemed like there can never be enough content. But I never wanted to do it because it just didn't make any sense. Like me and Spencer were doing the exact same thing. Like I wasn't going to make a video of, and there were a lot of things I didn't understand about it then too. But in my mind, it was like, we're both going to film the same workout doing it together. And there will be like slightly different commentary on it. That's about it. But when I got injured and started biking, I was like, okay, now this is probably something interesting that I can create. And I felt like I had something creative to contribute to the world of content. So definitely Spencer is most of the reason, like I wouldn't have started a YouTube channel if I wasn't around him. But just seeing him do it and the cycle of making videos, and it just seemed like such a good time.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a good time when you're just like fucking around with your friends making YouTube videos.
Yeah.
So that is 95% of the reason probably that I started it.
So what's it like for you now? Do you enjoy it?
My relationship with YouTube is interesting. I'm alone for the first time, like living alone. I have no friends to be.
Yeah. Well, welcome to my life. I've been alone for literally like 4 years making videos. So if anyone understands, it's me.
Yeah. Well, what do you do? Like, I give you some tips because I don't know how to get good content, and I also don't want to compromise the workout at all to like go place a camera somewhere or whatever.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is like, I'm not trying to become a professional athlete at the moment. So I don't like have to worry about that because it really is like, it takes so much mental energy and just like time to film videos when you're alone and doing workouts. Like if you're actually trying to crush a workout, it is so hard to film a good video because like you said, you're not going to go spend time to like set up the camera in the middle of a rep. Like, how do you even do that? So, I mean, I get that part of it, but I also just love like talking to my camera and I'm an oversharer. So I will talk about anything. So I think I've just learned over the years that I just overshare on the internet and that's my content. But I mean, I get it from your point of view. Though. Yeah.
People love oversharing. They love more than anything. I mean, the video I posted today was like a very like, I'm having a shit time, everybody. Here's the update. And everyone's like, thank you for sharing. Like, thank you for sharing. Like, they love it when it's shitty. Because no, you know, it seems like a cliche to say no one shares the shitty parts because people, I think, are starting to understand that. And it looks weird if everything you post is good. And they're like, okay, I need to be honest about what's going on. So it's not that nobody shares the shitty parts anymore, but people appreciate when people do share. When things are not going well and kind of exactly how you got there and like being a part of things were good, now they're bad, here's how I made them good again. Like, you know, it's all part of a process that people enjoy watching.
Yeah.
I mean, people just love it when I have a bad race and I'm crying after the, you know, at the finish line, people are just like, that's, look at the raw emotion. So it's just, the worse it is, the more people like it. But yeah, I just,
I don't know about that. I think people just find it relatable.
That's my experience.
Okay.
I think that's probably what it is.
I think, you know, when you have that huge breakout race, I feel like people will be very happy for you too. But I think people do obviously like the being vulnerable and showing that you're a human person, not just a robot that's out there training. And like, obviously the endurance sport world on the internet is very small. So I think people also like to see people in the endurance sport world. It's a really hard sport, go through times of, you know, hardship and then ultimately succeeding. Like there's a lot, you see a lot on the internet of people being like, woo, I crushed this race or whatever. But how many endurance sport people are being like, I sucked today?
Yeah.
I feel like not that
it's
many.
The reality. It's like seeing the reality of it, right? And it's the reality is that this stuff happens. But it was easy when I could ask someone to film the workout and then I could do the workout and not, and just literally not worry about it. You know, maybe I'll say something to the camera between reps, like say how it's going or crack a joke.
Yeah.
But I just don't know how, and I don't have the drive to necessarily figure out how, like, do I go hire a high schooler to, like, cause my dad, he's like, you need to go hire a high schooler. Like they would love to, you know, come film a workout.
Yeah.
And the thing that I like most about it, I'd say, is creating almost like a composition. So when I make the music and make a workout scene, that's usually my favorite part of it. So it's really fun for me when I have like my buddy Johnny, for example. He's really, really good with the camera and we can collaborate on making some beautiful piece of content. And he figures out the visual side and I figure out what it sounds like. So that's what I like most about it. I also enjoy the fact that there is a log of, you know, now it's a year and a half, like a log of exactly what's happened from I got injured and started biking to I'm now training with one of the best in the world to like, okay, I'm legitimately doing triathlon. I joined a group in New Hampshire to like that guy, like I'm now training with him full time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm training with one of the best guys in the world. And that's the whole thing's been documented. So on that long-term perspective, I like just having that out there. So I would love to be able to have somebody on hand all the time filming, basically have a YouTube channel where I don't have to work on it very much.
Yeah, where you just show up and do the workouts and...
Yeah, and just do the thing, like making music is such a hobby. Like, so that's not, it doesn't feel like work to me. And not that making YouTube videos feels like work.
I mean, it is at a certain point though. It's like, it is like a... You have to put work into it and you also have to be passionate about it. And you have to be really passionate about editing videos. Like, I don't think people really get that. Like filming is the fun part. The editing is what takes the actual work most of the time. Yeah.
Well, there's something, it's like a startup cost. Like I knew I was going to make this video. I was going to wear the couple.com t-shirt and I was going to, you know, eat Chipotle and tell everyone how I overtrained, even though I released a video. I released a video called Training Through Overtraining. Like,
yeah, I watched some of that too.
Obviously, I was being an idiot. And
did people say that you were being an idiot, or were you
Yes.
Did you believe them, or were you like writing them off?
I don't read the comments. I mean, I read the comments. I'm like, ah, that guy's wrong.
Yeah.
And the people who are like, oh, this is awesome. Like, that guy's right.
Yeah.
So
the positive guys are right. The negative guys are wrong.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's how I choose to live my life.
Yeah.
I was being an idiot, and now I have to say, like, okay, obviously I was an idiot. But the cool thing is that everyone saw me being an idiot. It wasn't like, I'm telling you that I did this thing and you have to take my word for it. It's like, you guys already saw what I did before and I thought it was going to work out. And now I have to tell you, like, this thing that you've been watching live has not been working out.
Yeah. How do you deal with like hate in that situation then? Cause I'm sure, I mean, I know the endurance sport world. I know the running world. I don't know that much about the triathlon world, but I'm sure everyone kind of is the same, but I feel like you're going to have some haters that are like, you'll never succeed.
Oh yeah. Well, initially I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep receipts. Like, cause like, I'm going to succeed.
You can flex on them later or what?
And then I'll show them. But then, okay, Lionel, he's one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
If there are maybe, you know, four or five people on the planet who can beat him in a race when he's at his best, if that. And if you go look at the comments on his video, the amount of like armchair coaches still trying to tell him like, you're doing this wrong, or like, have you ever tried this, is ridiculous. And even in a time when he's like clearly in the best shape of his life right now. So I kind of realized that people like that they're not doing it because they think they're right. They're doing it because putting somebody else down, feeling like, you know, they can slide into a pro athlete's DMs and tell them how stupid they are, even if it's true. Like, I was definitely being stupid.
Yeah.
Says something about them that they can feel good about. And me succeeding is not going to make them feel bad. Like, there's always going to be something that they can say I did poorly or I could be doing better that they know how to do.
Yeah.
So initially, I was like, I'll keep receipts, I'll show you. And then I look at the comments on a Lionel video, and I'm just like, oh, it's never going to work like that.
Yeah. Well, is Lionel even looking at his comments, or is it just, isn't Talbot?
No, I wish I could. He doesn't do Instagram. Like, he has a secret Instagram.
Then he has a professional one.
So, and then, yeah, his wife handles the, his like, you know, his real Insta, well, like, I don't know if it's his fake Instagram, but the one with 230,000 followers, the professional, the business page.
Yeah.
So yeah, Talbot handles the YouTube. He doesn't have to look at the comment. He doesn't have to worry about anything. He doesn't look at, you know, Instagram DMs, anything like that, or what people are commenting on his photos. So he's able to just focus on training, which is I'm a little bit envious.
Yeah. But I mean, you have to, I guess, put in the work to get to that point, which a lot of people didn't see before that happened. So you say that you're not motivated to find a high schooler to film your videos. So then what are you going to do?
Not make videos.
Okay. What? I mean, you can't just like not make videos. You have to do something.
You mean I have to make videos?
Like, when you have to make videos or like find, why don't you just find someone? I feel like you have so many loyal fans. I feel like someone would be willing to do it.
Probably. I keep making excuses for why I can't go or why I can't like find somebody, or like, even when I was taking all that time off, my parents were like, oh, you should go to yoga, it'd be great, like, you can, you know, there'll be some nice girls there, people, like, you have no friends. And I kept making up excuses for why I can't go to yoga. I was like, it's too far away, I'm not flexible, what if I fart in class, like, so, you know, So the excuse with high schoolers is, oh, well, they're going to be in school while I'm doing a workout. So like, why would I even bother? Even though it's just, it's just, I'm lazy and I make excuses. And that's about it.
Okay. Aren't your fans going to be sad that you're not putting out content?
Yeah, but I have no answer to that. Yeah. You pressing me on this and me being unable to give you an answer is a perfect reason for, yes, I should just put out a flyer on Instagram. Like, is there anyone in Tucson or Oro Valley who can come film a workout at this time or these days?
Well, maybe someone listening to this will slide into your DMs and be like, right, I am available.
Yeah. Slide into my DMs, even though, God, I just, then I have to read the DMs and there's so much nastiness in there.
Yeah. Social media can be rough if you're going through the DMs, especially when you're not feeling very good about like where you're at. It's the worst. Yeah.
I know. I'll go through the DMs though. If somebody wants to come film, just hop on a bike and film us running.
Yeah. So what's like your main goal out of everything? What do you want to do with your life?
I just want to fulfill my potential as an athlete. And this is interesting because when the sort of downhill started, that answer began to not satisfy me anymore. Like Johnny asked me that on camera and I said, oh, that's a cop out. I want to be the best in the world. Right. And so my like retroactive psychoanalysis is that I started to really not have a good time. And I was showing up to these sessions really tired and I was not having fun. And so in order for me to justify not having fun, I had to have some crazy, like, external goal, like this is how you're gonna become the best in the world is just absolutely grinding yourself to shreds. But that's the truth, is I just want to do this until I'm like very confident that my best performances are behind me and I can say I really gave it everything. And that will probably take, I hope it I think I'll peak when I'm 40, 38, 37. Like, this is a sport where it takes years and years and years of just aerobic development, right? It's nothing like running a 1500 or a 5K where, you know, once you're 31 or 32, it starts to be hard to produce that speed anymore. This is just how many years can you stack on top of each other of 20 to 30 hour weeks. There's something I do have in my head is the 10,000 hours. And when I do the math, that's, what is it? 20 hours a week, 50 weeks a year for 10 years. That's 10,000 hours. So the whole, you know, mastery of the sport, just putting in 10,000 hours. I think that's, I wouldn't say that's a goal, but that's what I feel I have to do to get close to reaching my potential.
Yeah.
So it's pretty abstract, but, I found something that I love to do and it just doesn't really seem to get old, even during the worst of these workouts, where I was just feeling horrible. I was really pressing myself. Like, is there anything else I would rather be doing? Like, would I rather be coding? Like, no. Would I rather be making music right now? Like, maybe, but no, I can do that later. Like, this is the second best thing. Showing up to a workout and feeling like absolute shit and just having a horrible time with it is the second, like, that's what I would like to be doing more than anything except showing up and feeling good.
Yeah. I mean, that's like all you can ask for. I feel like that is where fulfillment comes from. And your 10-year plan sounds like very fulfilling. I mean, even whatever, you know, abstract goal you have to be in the best of the world or anything, but the ultimate thing that matters is you for the next 10 years feeling like you're fulfilled doing what you're doing. It's not even about results at the end of the day. It's like the process along the way. That's what it's very cliche again. Like my college coach used to say, enjoy the process, because the process ends up being your actual life and what you're doing for the next 10 years. So if you're not enjoying it along the way, then what is the point? You know, even if you do end up like, you know, having this huge accomplishment down the road, did you just waste 10 years of your life? You know? So.
Yeah. And so Johnny posed this interesting question. He's like, if you were the best in the world, let's say you win Kona, you cross the line, you're the world champion. Then what? And I was like, I would probably tell myself that there's other people who have won six.
Yeah.
And so that what I just did is worthless unless I win five more. Like, so that he was right. Like, that kind of mindset leads to constant lack of satisfaction with whatever, even if you reached, you know, something that is borderline unattainable. So yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's just the process and you know, self-actualizing or, transcending. I was listening to the Rich Roll podcast. He had, I forget who the guest's name, but he was basically talking about self-actualizing and transcendence. And transcendence is where your self-actualization actually becomes sort of like a public good. So I guess in the sense of if me making YouTube videos provides inspiration to other people to follow their dreams, and it's a you know, it's like a plus one for putting out in the world helps people, then that's where me following my dream and, contributing something positive to the world meet. That's, just continuing to do that for as long as I can, I would say is the path to happiness, right? Happiness yeah. is in the same podcast. He says happiness is a direction. I was like, that's genius, right? Yeah. There's no, you happiness is a byproduct of following your passion.
Yeah. I really like that. I'm gonna have to listen to that podcast. I like Richville. I haven't listened to him in a little while, but
yeah,
he always has good guests. So
yeah,
maybe Richville should come on my podcast.
that would be some absolute clout. That's like the goals I have, just clout wise, or I would love to get on Rich Roll. I don't know what I probably have to win a lot of races to get on the Rich Roll podcast, and then somehow just do some crazy enough stuff to get on Joe Rogan, just because I mean it's the biggest podcast in the world.
Yeah,
like there's no greater exposure. That's
well, you have a good stepping stone being on the Convos of a Cold Brew podcast, so that can add to your little resume of podcasts. So.
Yeah, what's the percentage of guests that have gone on to be on Joe Rogan? It's pretty good, I imagine.
Oh yeah, for sure. 100% almost. Yeah, almost perfect score there. Okay, well, I don't want to keep you for too long. So we have some listener questions to go through pretty quickly. So Sweet. Someone actually just said, they said, not a question, literally obsessed with his music. They PR'd in their half marathon listening to it.
Oh, that's amazing. That's, you can't really ask for anything more than that. There's so much music that I listen to that just like on the trainer or it gets me going. Like I can just, for whatever reason, it just fits. And so if my music is doing that for somebody else, that's the highest praise I think I can possibly get.
Yeah. So do you listen to only your music on the train, or you listen to others too?
No, my music doesn't hype me up at all, because I have listened to every part of that song like for hours, literally if the song is 3 minutes, I've probably listened to every part of it for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And so by the time it's finished, I don't want to listen to it ever again.
Yeah. You upload it and you're like, no more. I'm done with that.
As unfortunate as that is. Yeah.
So what do you listen to when you're on the trainer?
I have a couple different playlists by mood. But when I'm on it, if it's really hard, I go like pretty heavy bass music, like Rez, LS Dream kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's basically pure rhythm. It's not melody. It's just like percussive sounds.
Yeah.
So I find the rhythm just, helps me continue to turn the pedals.
Yeah. Drown out the thoughts and just only have rhythm going into your ears to translate into your legs.
Exactly. I mean, it's very aggressive, which is why. So, and then if it's an easier ride, I'll listen to like progressive house, where it's just kind of the same thing for like 6 minutes, and then I can kind of forget how long it's been. I can kind of just get lost in it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, to each their own. I like to listen to rap music when I'm on the trainer. My longest ride ever was on the trainer. It was at altitude too, and I rode 4 hours, and I didn't even watch TV. I only listened to music and watched Zwift, and then I went insane.
What's so unfortunate is my computer is dying. And it can't handle Zwift and watching anything at the same time. Like I can't even pull up YouTube. So I'm really, all I can do if I want to be on Zwift is just listen to music. So.
Oh my gosh. So then you're just, even like just hard workouts, you're just only listening to music.
Yeah. I find it's pretty good for the mind. Like,
I mean, it definitely does train your mind. You strike me as the guy that would like go out for runs and like refuse to listen to music just to train your mind to be better.
Sometimes I do have that thought, but I have these aftershocks, the bone conduction headphones that I wear I wear those in the pool, and sometimes when I'm running. But sometimes I am like, okay, I just want to hear the sound of my breathing and footsteps.
I'm 1,000,000% against that. I'm like, I don't need to hear myself breathe at all. I can't even listen to podcasts when I run, because I can't stand listening to myself panting in the background, or even like when the songs switch from one to the next, when I hear myself breathe, I'm like, oh my gosh, turn it off.
You need the crossfade.
Yeah, no, seriously. I think you can do that on Spotify. I need to turn it on. Yeah. I hate it. Okay. Garen Martyr asked,
that's my boy.
Yeah. He asked, how does it feel getting beat by a 40-year-old man in a 500-yard time trial?
Oh, that's a low blow.
Does it hurt your self-esteem at all or no?
Well, yes. And how does it feel? It's horrible. I don't even think he's 40. He might be older than 40. So there was this guy. So Garen was my teammate at JP Elite. That's Ali's boyfriend. And like I said, they're all good swimmers. And there was this guy, Greg, the 40-year-old in question, who Greg has been swimming for like years, perhaps decades, but just easy. All he does is just swim laps. And then he went to James for coaching, and James basically coached him to like exactly where I was. And so I was going to do a 500 time trial. Someone suggested, oh, you should just race Greg. And I lost. I lost by a couple seconds. I was super pissed. And then everyone's like, you lost to Greg. So the answer is, I don't want to get too aggressive, but screw you, Garen.
bringing up the trauma.
I was so angry. And yeah, part of it is like, I'm supposed to be a professional athlete. Like, I know I haven't been swimming for very long, but like, I did just get beat by a casual 40 something year old guy.
What did Greg say? Was he like, haha? Was he pointing at you and laughing too?
No, Greg's a nice guy. Like, yeah. We were talking crap before, but at the end he was like, respect for actually doing this. It's like, I was the only one with something to lose there. Like, so yeah, I mean, but also I comfort myself by saying that swimming is just totally different than running. Fitness is, it only matters if you've been doing it for a long time and you have a good feel for the water and you have a good technique. So the fact that I can be at least competitive with someone who's just been doing it, I know, like, if we looked at, you know, it's like a muscle biopsy or whatever, did metabolic testing, I'm gonna blow Greg out of the water.
Yeah,
metaphorically. But when we're in the water, the experience obviously matters at these early stages a lot more than the fitness does.
Okay, next question. Biggest factor that allowed you to quit your job and go full-time as like a triathlete?
Reckless abandon, no sense of risk aversion. Like, that's it. I was completely in the moment. Like, I wasn't thinking about, that's not true. I thought about the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is I run out of money and like, I can go live with my parents for a couple months and try to get back on my feet. Like, I won't be like, you know, this is privilege. I won't be homeless. Which I'm thankful for that. And that allowed me to take that risk. And what's the best case scenario? Pretty much exactly what, like, it works out.
Yeah.
So when you think about the best case scenario is like dream come true, and worst case scenario is I get back on my feet and try again and it made it a lot easier to just take that leap.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense to me. So as someone that takes risks all the time, I completely get it. So maybe some are not very calculated on my end, but it's the same sort of thing. I feel the exact same way. So, yeah. And it works out. Like you said, when you're following your dreams, things seem to fall into place a lot of the time. So I don't know. I don't know how that works, but I'm going with it.
Yeah. There's something spiritual about it. It makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the last question I have is, do you have any advice to your younger self?
Yes. Like, I mean, so much advice. I'm curious if I would have listened to anything though. Like, I can tell myself, like, just don't take your easy days easy, hard days hard. That's number one. Take a day off every now and then. That's probably the biggest thing. Like, I would have just saved myself so many injuries. Figure a way to detach your self-worth from sport, which is where I am right now, at least understand that it's a necessary consequence of, if you are attaching your identity to sport and sport's going bad, you'll feel bad. And you need to find a way to cope with that in a healthy way. So there's that, but just listen to the people around you. Like, number one, that's the thing I'm thinking about, is because like, I could tell myself that, and me at 15 to 21 would have been like, screw you, I'm built different. But I was built normal AF, actually.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's good advice. I think a lot of people, I don't know, sometimes you just have learned from your mistakes, and that was yours. But maybe someone listening to this podcast will take your advice and be like, I need to tone it back. I need to cool it a little bit. I should listen to my coach to take it off.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the secret, which is not a secret at all. and I know this, and I still don't follow it. Like, I'm going to do my best to follow it. But if you want to be good at anything, but especially endurance sports, just do it consistently, but not over the top for a really long time.
Yeah.
For like 5 or 10 years. Like, if you're a runner, if you're a high school runner listening to this, you know, I thought I needed to run 80, 90 miles a week in high school. I just didn't need to do that. If you run for 5 years, if you run 40 to 60 miles a week, you know, kind of whatever you can handle, or well, significantly less than you can handle, but a decent amount of volume. If you run 60 miles a week with one workout and one long run for 5 years, you will get so good at running. Like, an uninterrupted 5 years of just like, just chop off 15 to 20 miles of whatever you think you need to do. That's the secret.
Yeah. And listening to your body along the way.
Yes. That's also really important.
Yeah. I mean, that is great advice. And that's the same advice I give to everyone else. I feel like it's really easy to get wrapped up though, and everyone else like running these amazing times. But at the end of the day, like you said, if you run, you know, 6 days a week with one workout consistently for 5 years, you're going to get very good at running. So,
well, but then the caveat there is, or corollary, whatever, you just need to focus on yourself and like, are you better than you were before? I still get caught up in this, you know, there's so many crazy good pro triathletes that I'm like, oh, I need to be hitting those numbers. And I know enough now to say like, no, just as long as I'm getting better than I was before, that's all that matters. So,
just
focus on yourself. And if you are better than you were before, then that's all you need to do.
Yeah. You've got the 10-year plan, 20 hours a week for 10 years. Okay. Well, I won't keep you on for any longer, but is there anything you want to plug for the podcast? Where should everyone find you?
Yeah, I'm on YouTube. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Spotify and Apple Music under Archimedes is my like real, that's like my sad boy, like, breakup music.
Okay.
And then Ari Clow is like beats from YouTube.
Okay.
Man, I should probably get more stuff to plug. I always get this question at the end of podcasts and I just don't. So it's probably my not doing very well as a businessman.
It's so, okay. You're learning along the way.
Yeah. Next time I'll plug a t-shirt website or something.
A t-shirt website, your merch.
Yes, my merch, that's the word.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Ari, well, thank you for coming on the show. To close out the episode, can we get a good old peace out, fellas?
Peace out, fellas.
Thank you all so much for listening to today's episode of Convos Over Cold Brew with Ari. I hope you enjoyed it. It was really fun getting to know someone a little bit better. I've never talked to Ari, so it was nice, you know, hearing his perspective on YouTube and transitioning into triathlon and everyone. I seriously love hearing everyone's story. It's always so interesting to me, so I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Convos Over Cold Brew Pod to be up to date and submit listener questions. Also, don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. It really helps me grow the podcast, and it's a free way for you guys to support, and it literally takes 15 seconds. It means the world to me. I love reading your guys' reviews. That's about it for now. Thanks so much again for listening, and I will catch you all next week. Peace out, fellows.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.